Okay, we're in 2 Samuel. 2 Samuel. Second Samuel chapter 2. David has lamented the death of Saul and Jonathan now, and of course wound up executing the guy that lied, saying that he had practiced some euthanasia with Saul when Saul indeed committed suicide. So the guy was lying. But in chapter 2, verse 1, we pick back up. It says there, it came to pass after this, so after David's lamentation over Jonathan and Saul, came to pass after this that David inquired of the Lord, saying, "Shall I go up unto any of the cities of Judah?" The Lord said unto him, "Go up." David said, "Whither shall I go up?" And he said, "Unto Hebron." Now, it clicked over in my mind here as I was reading the first part of chapter 2, verse 1. Came to pass after this that David inquired of the Lord, saying, "Shall I go up unto any of the cities of Judah?" And the Lord answered very specifically. Now, David is always going before the ephod and getting answers. And, of course, you don't have an ephod to get answers at. So I thought I'd take a moment to just point out here the Lord answered David's prayers very specifically and so on. And so it might occur to some young Christians, you know, where do I go to get answers, you know, from God? Because God's not going to speak to you. I mean audibly. He's not going to speak to you. He's not going to do this like David got to do it. He's not going to treat you like an Old Testament prophet and give you a vision or a dream or, you know, some supernatural thing like that. So let me just say to start with that you have a lot of answers already written down. I don't know, you know, what answers you need beyond that. You will need some more beyond what the Bible specifically says, I grant you. But this is surely a great start. I mean, most things that you pray about, you have answers for in the book. Now, where it comes to a thing where you're needing an answer that is not addressed specifically in the Bible, there's a couple of things to remember. First of all, David didn't walk by faith and without sight. David walked in part by faith, but also in part by sight. Now, you walk by faith, not by sight. So, whatever answer you need, you pray for, and you in faith understand that God directs and guides. He may answer a specific prayer, and he may close a door. But you just need to be aware that there's never going to be an hour that you hear the voice of God in your ear saying to do something. And frankly, you know, I'm all for praying along the lines of the Lord shutting a door and so on. But if you start making a habit of praying Gideon's fleece prayers, you're just going to wind up messing up somewhere. Because if you are one of those folks that are always looking for God to directly answer you by some situation that you set, you know, if I get up this morning and the sky is red in the east, then I'll know. If you start doing that stuff, you're going to get messed up. That's not much beyond Ouija board stuff, just so you know. The second thing that it strikes me to answer that you should remember, and I preached about this some time back, look in 1 Samuel chapter 10. Like I said, God answered David specifically, and I'm glad for that. I feel like I have gotten specific answers in prayer. But as often as not, I've been led by the Lord in answered prayer. And sometimes he answered by saying no and closing a door. But it's also true that you have to walk by faith. And what that involves is God's guidance, God's leadership. Sometimes it's the Lord providentially, you know, having some things happen. I mean, that sort of a phone call, you know, or something like that, that does give you an inclination, an indication. But it also is going to involve your discernment. It's also going to involve your character. It's also going to involve, you know, your judgment, whether it's good or bad. And so sometimes walking by faith and not by sight You're going to have to pray and then go on in faith or don't go in faith. And a lot of it that's going to play into it is God's leadership. That's true by faith, but also your own discernment. You know, you're having enough Bible packed into your head and your heart where if you're going to do the wrong thing, the Holy Spirit says, and that'll be an indication. You understand? Because we do walk by faith and not by sight. And a lot of what we do, I wanted to show you this. Look in 1 Samuel chapter 10. And let me make sure I got the right verse. Chapter 10 and verse 7. Now, I preached about this some time back, but Saul is getting ensconced as the king of Israel. He's not really the right guy, but the Lord is willing to use him as long as he doesn't screw up the way he did. Right? And so I drew some lessons from this in verse 6. The Spirit of the Lord will come upon thee, talking about Saul, and thou shalt prophesy with them and shall be turned into another man. Don't get tied up with that. That's the Lord saying that, you know, the Lord's going to do something for Saul. But verse 7, and let it be when these signs are come unto thee, that thou do as occasion serve thee, for God's with thee. And so, you know, Saul, a little bit later, when Nabal, the king of the Ammonites, is going to destroy the Jabesh-Gileadites, Saul goes to their rescue. And, you know, he says, do as occasion serve thee. And so, one thing that you have to consider is that doors the Lord opens and things that you have on your heart because you've been praying, reading your Bible, that if the Lord allows you to do it, do as occasion serves thee, right? You don't have to probably pray about whether you should give the guy at Walmart a tract. You have occasion to do it. I would do it. I don't even know that you need to pray about going street preaching. As long as you're not a moron and you do it wrong, I mean, do as occasion serve thee, right? If you're, you know, worried about, if just fretting about whether the Lord really wants you to go on a mission trip, if you can get together the money and you want to go and you can say in faith, Lord, help me go. Hey, dummy, go. Right? Do as occasion serve thee. It's like that. Now, there's a couple other things that I jotted down here because Saul, having received his instructions in time, messed the whole thing up. Right? So you have to make sure you don't mess it up. Don't be hasty. Don't just go jumping after every silly thing that crosses your mind that you could do for the Lord. I know a guy one time that counseled with me that he wanted to dance for the Lord. I said, well, good. He said, so I think that I can go to a bar and not drink and still dance with the ladies for the Lord. There's a low what bulb issue there, I think. But the point is, don't be hasty, don't be stupid, right? Don't defy precept. What you get from your Bible, you know, don't stand in defiance of a precept. Give the Lord opportunity to stop you. If this is a big deal, if you're making a big job decision, if you're making a big step in life, I mean, I don't think you have to do this whether you're going to have a cheeseburger or a hamburger, right? Mayo or Miracle Whip. The Lord might just smite you for praying about that. Just, you know, pow, you idiot. But I'm saying, if in a major thing, give the Lord an opportunity to close the door and stop you. The reason I came to Minnesota was not because I had a powerful calling to come, but because I had an opportunity to come, and I prayed for 9 months the Lord would stop me if he didn't want me to come. And so that's how I got here. You say, did it work? 35 years later, ta-da, you know. So you just have to, you know, for one, don't be a dummy. And don't expect the Lord to, you know, swoop in like Superman and, you know, stop you, but be willing to accept no for an answer, a closed door. And you need to ask whether this thing that you want to do, you're inclined to do, is first of all right, and second of all, if it's best. All things are lawful unto me, but not all things are expedient. Okay? So it needs to be, is it best for you to do that? And you may have to enfold family and wife and kids and all that kind of stuff into it. But, you know, people sometimes, like Saul, get off because what they really want to do is what they want to do. And sometimes what you want to do, if it's in the flesh, is not what the Lord wants you to do. So, again, David inquires, the Lord answers back directly. It's not going to happen for you, so I just thought I'd throw some of that in. Okay, chapter 2, verse 1. Came to pass after this that David inquired of the Lord, saying, "Shall I go up unto any of the cities of Judah?" The Lord said unto him, "Go up." And David said, "Whither shall I go up?" He said, "Unto Hebron." Now, I drew the map up here just so that, you know, I don't know how good you are with maps. And I know my map is not great, but just if you have some waypoints of the Holy Land in your mind, it'll help you out with reading your Bible. For one, right off the top of the Dead Sea is Jerusalem, right in this area, right? Okay, Hebron is right down here. Abraham went to Hebron. It was a town called, it was called Kirjath Arba. It was a city of the giants before this. But Abraham went there. Sarah died there. And so Hebron is one of those places you hear about over and over and over again. So that's where David went. Those two places aren't that far apart, as you can tell. Israel's not a very big land, so it was only a few miles apart, really. Look in verse 2. So David went up thither, and his two wives also, Ahinoam the Jezreelitess, and Abigail, Nabal's wife, the Carmelite. And his men that were with him did David bring up, every man with his household, and they dwelt in the cities of Hebron. So the Hebron's like, you know, every other city that's relatively decent size. It has little villages or townships around it. So this is Minneapolis, St. Paul, but we live in Coon Rapids, you know, or Oak Grove or wherever you live. So it's like that. Verse 4. And the men of Judah came, and there they anointed David king over the house of Judah. And they told David, saying that the men of Jabesh Gilead were they that buried Saul. You remember, by the way, Jabesh Gilead is way up here on the other side of the Jordan River. So that's where they went up. Jabesh Gilead, those were the folks that, again, the Ammonite, what's his name? I'm drawing a blank. The Ammonite was going to put out their eyes, right? And so this is after Saul got in office. So the Jabesh Gileadites appeal to Saul. Saul comes and rescues them. So I'm still fighting for that name. They have loyalty to Saul, and so they go rescue Saul's body off the wall of Bethshan. But it goes on down and says in verse 5, that David sent messengers unto the men of Jabesh Gilead and said unto them, "Blessed be ye of the Lord, that ye have showed this kindness unto your Lord, even unto Saul, and have buried him. Now the Lord show kindness and truth unto you, and I also will requite you this kindness, because ye have done this thing. Therefore now let your hands be strengthened, and be ye valiant. For your master Saul is dead, and also the house of Judah have anointed me king over them." So David doesn't go so far as say, "So you should come serve me," because he's just the king in Judah, you know, down here right now. You'll see in a second that Abner puts in Ishbosheth, Saul's son, and he's the king over the rest of Israel, the northern tribes. And so over here, Jabesh-Gilead is going to fall under the other king's power instead of David. So he doesn't press them. Verse 8. Okay, but Abner the son of Ner, and let's make sure we place him again. Go back to 1 Samuel 14. 1 Samuel 14. And Abner is kin to Saul. 1450. 1 Samuel 1450. The name of Saul's wife was Ahinoam, the daughter of Ahimaaz. The name of the captain of his host was Abner, the son of Ner, Saul's uncle. So Abner and Saul would have been cousins, right? So they're cousins. So Abner, back in verse 8, 2 Samuel 2:8, Abner, the son of Ner, captain of Saul's host, took Ishbosheth, the son of Saul. By the way, he is called Eshbaal in two genealogies in 1 Chronicles. So Ishbosheth is Eshbaal. Don't feel like I have to show you that necessarily. The son of Saul, and brought him over to Mahanaim. Now, just so again we know where these are. Again, this is over on the Gilead side. This is Gilead over here. And Mahanaim is somewhere like in this area. Back to verse 9. And made him king over Gilead, so on the east side of Jordan River, and over the Asherites, some of the peoples of that land, and over Jezreel. Jezreel, I showed you. Wherever Mount, you see Mount Carmel is up here, it's like a little stick-out point right there. Mount Carmel's right there, and the Jezreel Valley flows down this way. So Jezreel is in that valley. So he's talking about the northern tribes of Israel. Verse 9, over Jezreel, over Ephraim. Ephraim is just north of Judah, just north of Jerusalem. And over Benjamin, right near Jerusalem, and over all Israel. So basically, again, the other tribes at this point. Verse 10, Ishbosheth, Saul's son, was 40 years old when he began to reign over Israel. Reigned 2 years, but the house of Judah followed David. And the time that David was king in Hebron over the house of Judah was 7 years and 6 months. He reigned a total of 40 years. You find in another place where he reigned 33 years in Jerusalem. So, first of all, 7+ years there, and then 33 more years in Jerusalem. But you should maybe know, look in chapter 5, verse 5. David's 30 years old when he begins to reign. 5:4, 2 Samuel 5:4. David was 30 years old when he began to reign, and he reigned 40 years. In Hebron, he reigned over Judah 7 years and 6 months. So David's 30 when he begins to reign, which would probably make him 18 or 19 at the oldest when he killed Samson. killed a big dude. Killed the big dude, the giant. probably 19 or 20 years old when he killed the Gittite. And, you know, from there, it looks like there was a better part of 10 or 12 years that all this played out. I mean, he's anointed as a young man, and, you know, if he's thinking, oh, this is going to happen real quick, it didn't happen real quick. I mean, he was anointed but had to play this out for another dozen years or so. But he was 30 years old when he began to reign. That's interesting because Joseph was 30 years old when he stood before Pharaoh. John the Baptist was 30 years old when he began to prophesy of Jesus Christ, and Christ was 30 years old when he began was baptized. Now, what that comes from, it shows you the Lord's hand in history and doing stuff. Look in Numbers chapter 4, and that's because the Lord had set this up. Numbers 4, And go down to verse. Now, some of those guys, of course, were not Levites, but take the sum of the sons of Kohath, and by the way, this is the case with the rest of the sons of Aaron, Eleazar, and so on and so forth. But from among the sons of Levi, after their families, by the house of their fathers, from 30 years old and upward, even until 50 years old, all that enter into the host, all that enter into the host to do the work of, in the tabernacle of the congregation. So they're limited to not starting before they're 30. They're limited then in a ceiling with 50. So that's the reason some of those guys were 30 years old. The Lord saw to it that it didn't happen until they were 30. Verse 11, 2 Samuel 2, 11. And the time that David was king in Hebron over the house of Judah was 7 years and 6 months. And Abner, the son of Ner, and the servants of Ishbosheth, the son of Saul, went from Mahanaim to Gibeon. Okay? Again, so he's reigning from over here. Now, Gibeon, Bethel, Gibeah, and a few other of the other towns we commonly see are kind of in a, you know, range here just north of Jerusalem, just not very far off at all. But so they come across to Gibeon. Now, that's the town of the Gibeonites that deceived Joshua way back in the book of Joshua. But it says, Abner the son of Ner, verse 12, and the servants of Ishbosheth the son of Saul went out from Mahanaim to Gibeon. So they're coming back into the backyard of King David. So it's right on the line. And so you know what's going to happen. There's going to be this face-off because nobody's happy with anybody else at this point, right? Verse 13. And Joab the son of Zeruiah. And by the way, Zeruiah is David's sister. Joab and Abishai and Azahel, as far as I know, are the only guys regularly referred to by their mothers, you know, connected to by their mother. And I think that all that is about is the fact that the Lord wants you to remember that those three guys are sons of David's sister. Right? Verse 13, Joab, the son of Zeruiah, and the servants of David went out and met together by the pool of Gibeon. And they sat down, and the one on the one side of the pool and the other on the other side of the pool. So by the time this is over, you'll see by the casualties in this battle, each of those guys, each of those armies is probably 1,000 men. So I don't know what they're doing exactly other than just, you know, sitting there near the border of, you know, where they shouldn't be and just glaring at each other. And so something's bad is going to happen. And sure enough, verse 14, and Abner said to Joab, let the young men now arise and play before us. Play. When the children of Israel had Aaron make the golden calf, the Bible says they played there. So that wasn't good. And this isn't good play either. Right? It says, play before us, and Joab said, let them arise. I think they're proposing, let's just have a little display here. So each group of guys picks 12, verse 15. Then they arose and went over by number 12 of Benjamin, which pertained to Ishbosheth, the son of Saul, and 12 of the servants of David. And this is how they played. They caught everyone, his fellow, by the head. You say, what's that about? Well, if you've ever seen hockey players fight, they don't stand at a distance and punch each other. They'll grab the other guy's head. And so these guys were grabbing each other's heads and stabbing with them. Okay? So it's like that. Verse 16. Caught everyone his fellow by the head, thrust his sword into his fellow's side, So they fell down together. Therefore, the place was called Helkath Hazurim, which is in Gibeon. That means something about smoothness of stones. It doesn't define it here, and there's probably a reason why, because it's like one of those places that's not paradise, but it's called paradise. Like Paradise, Arizona, or something like that. You know, it's not, it's a desert, something like that. I don't know. Anyway, and there was a very sore battle. We'll see casualties here in a second. And Abner was beaten, and the men of Israel before the servants of David. And there were three sons of Zeruiah. Let me show you what I was talking about earlier. 1 Chronicles 2. 1 Chronicles 2. First Chronicles chapter 2, going down to verse 13, giving you who Jesse begat, his firstborn Eliab, verse 13, and Abinadab, the second, Shema, the third, Nethaneel, the fourth, Radai, the fifth, Ozem, the sixth, David, the seventh, whose sisters were Zeruiah and Abigail. And the sons of Zeruiah, Abishai, Joab, and Azahel. So again, those guys are referred to by their mother's name rather than their father's, presumably because the Lord wants you to keep up with who they are. They were David's nephews, right? So both Ishbosheth and David have close kinfolk around them. Of course, you know, we're talking about tribes here, so these would be families, at least at some distance. But in this case, it's cousins and nephews. So, you know, because of Benjamite, they're all kin, right? And all Judeans are kin. So it would be family. Verse 18. There were three sons of Zeruiah there, Joab, Abishai, and Azahel. And Azahel was as light of foot as a wild roe. So the saying goes, he could run like a deer. Not talking about a John Deere either. Verse 19. And Azahel pursued after Abner. And in going, he turned not to the right hand nor to the left from following Abner. So he's specifically after Abner. He's not, you know, jogging off to try to catch up with somebody else. He's passing by folks to get to Abner. Verse 20. Then Abner looked behind him and said, art thou Azahel? And he answered, I am. And Abner said unto him, turn thee aside to thy right hand or to thy left, and lay thee hold on one of the young men, and take thee his armor, because he figures he's after him, you know, for a trophy for his armor. But Azahel would not turn aside from following him. And Abner said again to Azahel, turn thee aside from following me. Wherefore should I smite thee to the ground? How then should I hold up my face to Joab thy brother? Howbeit he refused to turn aside. Wherefore Abner with the hinder end of the spear smote him under the fifth rib, that the spear came out behind him. Now I don't know. I mean, I've always pictured it as Azahel's chasing him, and as he gets closer, suddenly, you know, Abner puts on the brakes and jams his spear backwards through Azahel. It doesn't say that's what happened. Presumably, he could have turned on him, I guess, and then rammed him through with the wrong end of the spear. But it's a pretty brutal way to die. I was looking the other day at something, and there's this rifle that this guy had made or something, and you know, a 50 caliber bullet is a half inch bullet, right, in diameter. Well, this was a one bore caliber. In other words, it was a full inch bullet, solid bullet. And the guy was firing it off, and first of all, I mean, he could barely hold the rifle when it went off, because the stinking cartridge was like this. It was just ridiculous. That's probably about an inch right there. I mean, it was hitting stuff and just exploding it. It's just crazy. So I can't imagine what somebody stabbing you with the wrong end of the spear would be like. And for that matter, how much force it must have taken to run him through, because he ran him through. Verse 23. Howbeit he refused to turn aside, wherefore Abner with the hinder end of the spear smote him under the fifth rib, that the spear came out behind him. And he fell down there and died in the same place. And it came to pass that as many as came to the place where Azahel fell down and died stood still. Quite a sight. Joab also and Abishai pursued after Abner. And the sun went down when they were come to the hill of Ammah that lieth before Gia by the way of the wilderness of Gibeon. So being in Gibeon somewhere, they're headed back towards Mahanaim, back home. And so they're somewhere in this wilderness area here, heading for the river. Verse 25, and the children of Benjamin gathered themselves together after Abner and became one troop and stood on the top of the hill. So he calls all the guys that are fleeing together, and said they kind of fortify up on top of a hill. If there's going to be a battle, we're going to go out well fortified. Verse 26, then Abner called to Joab and said, shall the sword devour forever? Knowest thou not that it will be bitterness in the latter end? How long shall it be then, ere thou bid the people return from following their brethren? And Joab said, as God liveth, unless thou hadst spoken, surely then in the morning the people had gone up every one of them from following his brother. I think what Joab's saying there is, good thing you said something, because what was going to happen, we were going to chase you down and kill you all. Then we were going home. So it was like that smart aleck, you know, super testosterone thing. Verse 28. So Joab blew a trumpet, and all the people stood still and pursued after Israel no more, neither fought they anymore. And Abner and his men walked all that night through the plain, passed over Jordan, went through all Bithron, and they came to Mahanaim. And Joab returned from following Abner. And when he had gathered all the people together, there lacked of David's servants 19 men and Azahel. And the servants of David had smitten of the Benjamite of Benjamin and of Abner's men, so that 360 men died. So 360 guys plus 20, 380 guys. Now, that's two armies that have come together. It makes it sound like they were small troops, but there may have been 2,000 guys there fighting for that kind of, for that sort of casualty list to occur. So it wasn't a small deal. Verse 32. And they took up Azahel and buried him in the sepulcher of his father, which was in Bethlehem, for what it's worth. Bethlehem, this is Hebron, this is Bethlehem. This is Jerusalem. Bethlehem is down here, just a little ways south of Jerusalem. It helps me to know where things are. It just does. Verse 32, and they took up Azahel, buried him in the sepulcher of his father, which was in Bethlehem. And Joab and his men went all night, and they came to Hebron at the break of day. So they traveled all night and made it back to Hebron. 3:1. Now, there was long war between the house of Saul and the house of David. But David waxed stronger and stronger, and the house of Saul waxed weaker and weaker. And so that's the Lord's hand. I mean, the Lord wanted David primarily anyway. And with Saul having messed up, he wasn't going to bless what Abner and Ishbosheth were doing. So he's got his king now, so it was more or less going to happen. Verse 2. And unto David were sons born in Hebron. His firstborn was Amnon of Ahinoam the Jezreelitess. So that's a wife we knew about. And his second, Chileab of Abigail, the wife of Nabal the Carmelite. So now that is that kid's name in another place. Look in 1 Chronicles 3. 1 Chronicles 3. I show you for a purpose, is Daniel, 1 Chronicles chapter 3. And notice verse 1. Now these were the sons of David, which were born unto him in Hebron. Firstborn Amnon of Ahinoam the Jezreelitess, the second Daniel of Abigail the Carmelite. I'll mention him more in a minute. So just so you know, Kileab is Daniel. Three, back to 2 Samuel 3:3. And his second son, Kileab of Abigail, the wife of Nabal the Carmelite. And the third, Absalom, the son of Maacah, the daughter of Talmai, king of Geshur. And the fourth, Adonijah, the son of Haggith. And the fifth, Shephatiah, the son of Abital. And the sixth, Ithraim, by Eglah, David's wife. These were born to David in Hebron. Now, one thing I've always reflected on reading through here is, okay, all these kids born in Hebron, the last two didn't make a list or anything, really. They didn't apparently do much. The Bible doesn't record much. But notice the first four. You have Amnon, who was bad all the way through, right? You have Absalom, who was bad all the way through. You have Adonijah, who was the final son to try to take over the throne, right? Now, those three guys, and then born in their midst was Kileab, Daniel, who we hear nothing about. I find that remarkable because, you know, one bad apple spoils the lot, right? And here you have three sons of four that are absolute devils that try to overthrow the throne, overthrow the kingdom, and all this kind of stuff. Meanwhile, you have Kileab, Daniel, whose name is never mentioned. I can only draw from that Daniel, in spite of his brothers, kept his nose clean. And so the Bible didn't have anything else to say about him to the negative, really for the positive either. But I take the lesson that, you know, it's worth keeping your nose clean. Because when you have an Amnon on one side of you, an Absalom, and then an Adonijah on the other side, I mean, you would have an excuse to turn out to be a rotten apple. But apparently he didn't, which is kind of a blessing. All right, back to verse 6. I'm going to stop in place in 1 second here. It came to pass while there was war between the house of Saul and the house of David, that Abner made himself strong for the house of Saul. I think you go back to chapter 2, verse 8. Abner, the son of Ner, captain of Saul's host, took Ishbosheth, the son of Saul, and brought him over to Mahanaim, made him king. So Abner made him king. It looks like Abner is the power behind the man at this point. So when it says Abner made himself strong for the house of Saul, that's what it means. And Saul had a concubine whose name was Rizpah, the daughter of Aiah. And Ishbosheth said unto Abner, "Wherefore hast thou gone in unto my father's concubine?" An accusation. Abner. Then was Abner very wroth for the words of Ishbosheth, and said, "Am I a dog's head, which against Judah do show kindness this day unto the house of Saul thy father, to his brethren and to his friends, and have not delivered thee into the hand of David, that thou chargest me today with a fault concerning this woman?" And he's saying, am I a dog's head that I've been so kind to your father, your father's friends, and for that matter, you, that you accuse me of this thing? And so from this point on, Abner is going after David. Abner's going to try to turn the kingdom over to David. So we'll stop there and get into the rest of this later. Any questions or comments?